Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, Coach David Thorpe. How are you?
Doing fantastic. It's a special day.
It is a special day. We have True Hoop boss Henry Abbott here. How are you, sir?
I'm not the special part.
You are not the special part. We are joined by longtime NBA writer, NBA journalist extraordinaire, the one and only Howard Beck. How are you, sir?
Gentlemen, good to be with you. If I'm the special part of this, that's way too much pressure. I don't think I can live up to it. I'm already looking out my window to see if there's somebody else I can pull it off the street. What options do we have out there? I mean, usually this hour, a lot of people walking their dogs.
Yeah.
Here in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. Delivery people constantly. The occasional garbage truck. It's a street sweeping day, which is very exciting.
Yeah. If you see a net jersey, you just go. You're like, yeah.
So people will be fleeing to go move their cars to avoid tickets very shortly.
Like, what do street sweepers actually do? Like, when you watch what do they actually do when you watch it? Besides move the garbage across the other side.
Yeah, they move it from the curb to the middle.
Right. The brushes, these massive brushes just swirl around, and so it's just throwing the stuff somewhere else, right? Like, I don't understand how it actually gets anything off the street. I just know that I gotta years where I've had a car, which unfortunately we do again. It just means you have to go play this whole game of automobile twister, where everybody's moving their cars and trying to coordinate so that we don't all bump into each other and so that we also don't get ticketed. It's annoying and it's stressful. And if you start hearing a lot of honking and screaming in the background during this recording, I guarantee you that'll be why.
That's what
can I just
welcome to New York City, kids.
Can I just make one point? Before we went on air, they were making fun of all you fucking New Yorkers are making fun of where I live, and I'm with you. But I have no fucking idea what you're talking about right now, Howard. Moving on.
You don't want to know,
right,
Thorpe.
Right.
Well, you have the alligators come and take the trash off. That takes the trash for you. No problem. The gators come.
Right now, it's been raccoons lately, but it's a whole other thing.
Oh, well, yeah. Whole other thing.
How you doing, alligators and raccoons, Howard? Are you safe?
I've seen neither recently. Oh, a few months ago, I saw a raccoon perched on somebody's air conditioner. We have the window air conditioners in this city. I was walking through Park Slope on the way to an appointment, and people were stopped and staring at something. I'm like, what are these people doing? And I looked to my right. This huge freaking raccoon is sitting on top of someone's window AC unit, just perched there doing. I don't know what he had in mind. Obviously, he was about to rob something, because that's what raccoons do.
I'll leave it at that since it's a basketball show. The raccoons we have down here, they play 2-on-2 at the park with dudes. I'm pretty sure I've seen a few of them playing. Like, these fucking things are wolves. They're so big.
What is happening?
I just want to leave this discussion on this note. No matter how many raccoons I've seen in this city, no matter how many fucking rats I've seen, and everybody's always all freaked out by the rats, but it beats the hell out of walking out and seeing a freaking alligator like eating your puppy. All right. If there's another story about an alligator puppies. Eating old ladies, eating puppies, happen. Eating
they,
cats.
They did kill a woman.
I don't just, that oh shit creeps God. Me out. I don't need
I'm
that.
I'm 58. And I think it's the first death I've heard about from someone who lived here. Just happened. An old lady was killed. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that sounds great.
Henry, let's talk about basketball. Alligators eating puppies. I got really sad. All right. We had a basketball return last night. A fairly important player played basketball again for the first time since January 8th, I want to say. Kevin Durant made his debut for the Phoenix Suns in a win against the Charlotte Hornets. 23 points, 6 boards, 2 assists, 2 blocks in 26 minutes. You know, I thought for a minute's restriction, he looked pretty good. Offensively, he's always easy to interject everywhere, as we've talked about him multiple times. But I thought defensively, there's some things I liked that he did, but everyone's quick thoughts on Kevin Durant rejoining the basketball world. We'll start with our guest first.
So it's always nice when NBA media talking points and cliches come to life and validate all the things that we like to say, because we'll all sit here and say, like, yeah, you know, Kevin Durant, sure, not a lot of time to acclimate to the Suns, but Kevin Durant is the most plug-and-play superstar maybe we've ever seen. And then we watched the game last night, and it's like, yep, there it is. It doesn't take any adjustment whatsoever. I mean, I still believe, and Coach, you know, I'll let you or be curious to hear your thoughts on this. I still believe in my gut that 20 games is a very, very, very short span to integrate somebody as important as Kevin Durant with two other players who are as important as Chris Paul and Devin Booker, all of whom are guys who are used to controlling a lot of the offense. And I still think that there's an adjustment that has to be had there, and a chemistry and a cohesion, a rhythm that has to be established before they get to the playoffs. And I still think 20 games is a very, very short window to do all that. And he probably won't play all 20 games because he's Kevin Durant and he's got a lot of miles and injury history and just came back from a couple months off from injury. But all that said, to flip on the TV to see Kevin Durant playing for not just the first time in a Suns uniform with new teammates, but the first time in 2 months because he's been rehabbing a knee injury, and to look that good, it's just astounding. Like, we have to sometimes step back and just process, like, this really is as impressive and as cool as it seems. The guy hasn't played in 2 months and he's never played with this team, and that's what he can do. Basically, like, the equivalent of, like, rolling out of bed and just dropping 30 on people, right? Like, that is, it wasn't 30, but, like, that's what he did. He dominated the game in the way we're used to seeing, as if he had been there all along and hadn't missed any time at all. And so that is fantastic for the Suns. That, I think, is scary for the rest of the Western Conference. I remain a pump the brakes guy on the crowning of the Suns as Western Conference champs just by virtue of what we see on paper, because I think every team in the West that has a chance has some combination of strengths and caveats, and it's a weird year in the West, and it's all packed up, and we can talk about all that. And I think the Suns are right in there among the favorites, but I don't want to say that they are the favorite just because I don't ever want to rush into that just based on, oh, we added superstar A to stars B and C, ergo they've got the best. It's always more complicated than that, right? But an incredible, impressive debut.
This just in, David Thorpe, Kevin Durant still good at basketball.
Yeah, I mean, everything Howard said was exactly right. And he's smart because the last thing he said, especially, where it just isn't that easy. There's a lot that has to be factored in. He is the easiest guy to play with. I agree. I mean, all the greats are pretty much in that same. It's not hard to play with LeBron most of the time. With Kevin Durant, it's always easy to play because he isn't so ball dominant the way LeBron is. But guys, there's really, it doesn't matter what Kevin Durant does because you already know what he's going to do. He's the most predictable guy we have in the league. We know who Devin Booker is. The question comes down to Josh Okogie, Torrey Craig, and Craig Paul.
Cliff Paul.
Yeah, Cliff Paul. That's it. Like, we already know what the other guys are going to do. We know Ayton is. Chris Paul is, look at his numbers in February. Don't look at his averages. Look at his individual game performances. 1-for-8 isn't an aberration for him. He has these games where he just really struggles to score. And now you've got either Josh Okogie or Torrey Craig that have to also play well on offense for their offense to be terrific. And I don't care what they do right now. Honestly, I didn't even look up what they did last night. First of all, they played a G League team. No apologies to Kevin Durant, but he played a G League team. That's fine. I think their coach would even say that, Steve Clifford. In the playoffs, I don't know if Torrey Craig and Josh Okogie can do what they need to be able to do, especially given that Chris Paul is not going to play well 3 games in a row, almost for sure. And so it comes down to that. So to Howard's point, there's every team in the West, including the by far best team, Denver Nuggets, are not. You can't just assume they're going to be the best team. They all have flaws that can be taken advantage of. They all have scabs that can be picked in the postseason, the way to put it grossly. And Phoenix does too. And maybe it turns out we're all talking here in July, or late June rather, and Craig and Okogie were just so consistently good offensively, because we know they can guard. Because Chris Paul won't be good offensively every game. But if those guys are very good most games, Phoenix has a great chance to win the West and the whole thing. But we don't, until we see that, it's hard to project.
Because they're going to leave those guys.
No one's going to guard them.
Season, right? They're not going to guard them at all. And it's not even if they make two in a row, they're going to guard them. They have to do that for like 2-3 games. Okay, now I'll guard you.
Guys, we'll get to Henry. I'm sorry, Henry. But just remember, the Celtics chose to not guard Steph Curry as a strategic plan. If you guys remember that series, they waited till game 4, and then by then it was too late. They were up 2-1 as it happened, but that's when they kind of flipped it. They let Curry take some of the crazy shots that Curry can make, and he made them. They did that because they're worried about the Queens that aren't slicing and dicing him every other way. It's very easy not to guard those guys from Phoenix, and that's what every team is going to do. Henry?
I don't have anything brilliant to say about last night's game because I didn't watch it. But but I'll tell you this. Like, when Howard was talking about, like, you know, how amazing it is that this guy has come back again, right? I think, okay, so he was – when he was looking for his Achilles tendon on the court at age whatever, 32, 33, right? Like, I was like, the math is, like, he's probably not going to be elite again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and now he's had a bunch of other things, and now he's, you know, he is moving, right? Like, he's – and it really takes me back to when he first came in the league and he didn't test very well in the combine or whatever. Like, everyone was like, you need to be beefy like LeBron, was basically what the argument was. And he, you know, didn't. He refused. He stayed skinny as hell. And I think he's an incredible argument for skinny as hell, right? Like, he just doesn't have as much force on his joints.
Completely agree.
He's recovering, right? He recovers better. And I don't think we can count on it keep happening, but, you know, nut jobs on Twitter are basically like, he will be better because every time he has a big injury, he comes back better. And it's like,
yeah, that's not,
that will be true until it's not true. And it'll be soon. Right. Like, it's just, sorry. I've been saying this as someone who also loves moving and has dealt with age, right? Like, age is a motherfucker. Like, but like, yeah, it's, you know, it's not going to be true forever. It's not magic. But I do think that, you know, remember when, like, Tayshaun Prince was a rookie and everyone's like, oh, I can't fucking play like that. It's like, well, you can play like that. Like, you can't, you totally fucking can't. Right. Like, you can be skinny. And this guy right now is the argument for it.
Yeah, 100%. David, I wanted to talk really quick about what the Suns could potentially do defensively with Durant. We talk about how good he is offensively. We all know plug and play, all that. But what I liked last night that I saw it a couple times, and, you know, they didn't do a ton of it because it's early and they're still working things out and they're playing a G League team, as you mentioned. But normally the Suns are drop heavy in pick and roll just because they don't have other rim protectors. Ayton played a little more aggressive a couple times last night, and you saw the value of having a second seven-footer on the court who can protect the rim. So I thought that was a nice change-up that they could potentially add to their defensive wrinkle.
I was speaking to a coach earlier this year about guarding the superstars in the league, and they were playing a superstar, and it was his scout. He was an assistant coach. And he made a whole video of how to guard this particular superstar player. And I said, I don't need the 20-minute version of your video. Like, give me the gravity, which are the biggest physical force involved. And I said, and you better give me the right answer. And he said, oh, we got to change up our looks. I'm like, thank you. Lead with that next time, brother. That's the whole point. Defensive versatility. You cannot let Chris Paul and then certainly Devin and Kevin know what's coming. You have to change it up. Converse it the other way. Now reverse the other way for against Phoenix. Having Durant on defense gives them way more options defensively of what they can do. And I think that makes them much more potent potentially defensively.
I like it. All right, moving on to a story that has me concerned. As everyone knows, this is a Memphis Grizzlies podcast. It's not a Grizzlies podcast. Just kidding, but I love the Grizzlies. And so does David.
What are the street sweeping procedures in Memphis?
Well, listen. Right. That may take on a different meaning. Look, this is the third incident now. And what I'm talking about is Ja Morant. The Washington Post reported yesterday that there was an incident with Ja and associates of his at a mall in Memphis, where the mall security director called the police and said that he felt as though his life was being threatened by associates with Ja Morant. And one of the associates hit the security guard in the back of the head. Nobody was arrested. There was no weapon involved, but that's one thing. 4 days later, everybody, I think, knows the story about the pickup game at Ja's house where there was a foul or something happened. A ball got thrown in Ja's face. Ja punched the kid up a number of times on the ground. The kid also, in that Washington Post report, says that when Ja went into his house and came back out, there was a weapon visible in his waistband of his pants. He didn't think anything about holding it or anything, but he said, that's what the kid said, allegedly. And then, of course, we know about the incident that happened January 29th of this year. Pacers game in Memphis. Where after the game, you know, a lot of back and forth between T. Morant and Devontae Pack, a friend of John Morant, and the Memphis Pacers. And the Indiana Pacers players spilled over after the game into the tunnel below the loading docks at the FedEx Forum. And the Pacers traveling party said that a red laser light beam was shat was flashed on them. They thought it was attached to a gun. The NBA investigated. Nobody could corroborate there was a gun. But either way, this is three things now that involve Ja Morant adjacent, right? People that he associates with are making life difficult and making people feel their life is threatened. And for someone like Morant, who is the face of a up-and-coming team, a contender, actually, who is an all-NBA player, a potential future MVP possibly one day, he's got a signature shoe coming out, just on the five-year rookie max extension. These are all problematic things to me. And everyone on this pod should know by now, I am not into respectability politics. I don't believe in that. However, life isn't fair. And when you are Ja Morant, you cannot be associated with these things. Like, it's not good for you just as an individual, one. Two, not good for the Grizzlies, because we're talking about this instead of basketball, right? And it's not good for the NBA. And look, Memphis, I don't know how much you guys know about the city of Memphis. There are plenty of people who are actual thugs and gangsters in Memphis who would have no problem. Oh, job, you're really about this, yeah, right? We'll happily engage you in this type of activity. And none of that ends well.
Guys, I'm not, the journalists can talk first. I'm just a coach.
I mean, I'll jump in first on this. And I mean, Henry and I probably have some similar experiences as, you know, reporters over the years, where a couple things that I think everybody should be aware of, especially, you know, fans and readers, listeners who are trying to process all this. One, just as a matter of course here, not everything that's in a police report is fact. We as reporters get statements from police. We look at police reports. We when someone's charged with something, there are court filings. All of these things feel very official and carry a certain kind of seeming legal weight because they are official and they came from official people. It's, you know, the old expression, authorities said, right? That is a newspaperism, right? Authorities said XYZ happened. This is what's in the official report. This is what witnesses said. Witnesses are not always reliable. Police reports are not always accurate. In fact, we have too much of a history of police reports being distorted, embellished. So that's not to say that any of that is going on here. It's just to say that part of the skepticism that comes with being a journalist is to be skeptical in all directions, yeah, or at least to apply a little bit of rigor and say, just because this is put on paper and in an official report doesn't mean it's the facts. All that, so that's my cautionary note as a reporter. But to the broader picture that's being that's coming into focus here, and the Washington Post story, we had one report from TMZ about the incident with Ja Morant and the kid in the pickup game. Then we had the Athletic report a week or two ago about the confrontation between Ja's friends and some of the Pacers and the laser and people suspecting that laser was attached to a gun and all that. Now we have a third thing, this incident with a mall and a security guard. That is three separate incidents, all of which, you know, again, more than two sides to every story. And there have been no charges as of yet. The NBA's own investigations have concluded nothing in particular, I guess. And so there are caveats to all this, but it's three separate incidents, all involving Ja and his friends, and either violence or threats of violence or perceived threats of violence. At some point, it's a pattern. And if you're the NBA and if you're the Grizzlies, it has to be a concern. I will say this, and now I'm just speculating or giving you my perspective based on 26 years of covering this league and 30 years as a journalist. Whatever the league and the Grizzlies may or may not say, trust me when I tell you that they have investigated the holy hell out of this beyond probably what the cops have even done. And that their level of concern will probably far exceed anything that they will be willing to ever say on the record, unless this crosses some other line, unless there are charges filed, unless there is another incident. The NBA will do everything possible to also protect its image, the image of its franchises, and the images of its players, especially star players at Ja's level. No doubt about that in my mind. That's not to say they're covering anything up, just to say that they are not going to actually acknowledge concern unless they have to. Right. And they're not going to acknowledge anything beyond that unless they have to. But trust me when I tell you, there is no question in my mind, this has them on high alert. And they have, the NBA has a vast security apparatus, an entire department at the league level, also at team levels, that are all former cops, former FBI agents. They know how to dig into these things. And often they know way more than what we've been privy to publicly.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Jim Tanner is his agent, who's a really nice guy, and released a statement. They were obviously delighted that the Washington Post reporting was like wrong on one fact, right?
Right.
The allegation was not that he pointed the gun. And so that was, and so they just leapt all over this, right? Like,
quick question, Henry, because as I followed this, that particular point, I thought that was maybe a mistweet and not in the story itself.
So that's correct, Howard. Candace Buckner actually misquoted that. And when she tweeted out the Washington Post article by Molly, I forget the name of the reporter who did it at the Post. Mm-hmm. So yes, then they said, nope, that was our mistake, not pointed. Right. The kid said it was in the waistband. So you are correct.
Right. So the reporter on the Washington Post story was Molly Hensley Clancy, who I assume is a Metro reporter, you know, a news site reporter.
She's a sports investigations reporter.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Sports investigations. So Candace Buckner, who, you know, I believe all of us know and is I consider wonderful. A friend. Candace was not a reporter on this story. So I just want to note that when Jim Tanner is trying to use Candace's mischaracterization in a tweet, that is. He's using that. I'm just going to say this. I'm sorry, Jim Tanner. He's using that to try to impugn the entire story written by Molly Hensley Clancy, which had nothing to do with Candace's tweet, which simply made an error that she later corrected. So using that to then try to throw out the entire story is a classic misdirection play. That part was slightly irritating to me as a reporter.
And then there's some big talk about like people who are just trying to profit off of, he's a talented player and he's a family first and they're trying to profit off his downfall. It's like, okay. I mean, I get why you got to say that. And like, okay. But even in this sort of like, you know, just taking the facts and just kind of putting them on a spit and roasting them, like moment of an agent and a lawyer, you know, doing his job. Even there, the firearm allegations, of which there are many, right? Could not be corroborated. So this is like the sunniest version of events. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, what you would say if you could is he's never owned a gun.
Correct.
Well, there was no gun there, right? Mm-hmm. But none of that, right? Like, and then the July 26th incident, which I believe is the pickup game story, was purely self-defense, which is 100% confirmation something happened, right? Like, I see that. I don't know. I wasn't there. I have no opinion on what happened. But to me, I just think that like, okay, like life is super not fair. Like, it's absolutely true that people will come for you and try to put you in a bad position so they can sue you and get a settlement and take your money, whether that's over like sex stuff or violence stuff or whatever, right? This is a real thing. There are people who are thinking about you in that way. You're an opportunity in this way. That sucks. It's not fair. But how did LeBron have none of these? Like, what did he do? Like, in that same unfair world, he navigated this. He's been in the NBA for 450 years. Like, and somehow it doesn't have this. He's not the only one, right? Like, there is a way to do it. And it involves an unfair workload that you shouldn't have to do. But you shouldn't be fucking around with guns at parties. Like, you just shouldn't be, right? Like it shouldn't even be close, right? Like, you just have to follow this other set of rules. It's just because you make so much money. And I'm sorry, but, like, it's unfair. Like, and it's not the way it should be, but it is that way. And if you want to not have any of these, it's an option. You can work that out.
Yeah, well, to your point, Henry, Ja Morant is not the only star in the NBA. He's not the only rich star in the NBA. He's not even the biggest star in the NBA. Nobody else in recent memory has had this kind of series of incidents. So if people are trying to, you know, profit off of you, if people are trying to use, you know, threats and lawsuits or bait you into something and all this, okay, everybody in that echelon is a target potentially, but nobody else is in this situation right now, which suggests that through his own actions or the actions of his friends or whatever, maybe Ja has not done enough to make sure that these things don't happen. And also to your point, Henry, there's a big difference between saying there's no corroboration of things like a gun versus saying there was no gun. And so there's enough ambiguity there in their own denials that you wonder, okay, well, we're obviously missing some stuff here, but something happened. And, firearms may have been involved, at least in appearance, if not actual usage of. Again, all very concerning. And it's interesting, too, because it's been a long time, guys, since it's not to say the NBA, there are no incidents of crimes or alleged crimes or anything else with NBA players. Obviously, Miles Bridges.
But it's seldom now. It's seldom.
It's seldom. Yeah. And Henry and I were certainly around covering the NBA in the early 2000s.
As a Blazers fan.
Right, you had Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden.
In D.C., that was, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there was that. And that incident even is like, 15 years ago?
Yeah, early 2000s, yeah.
And the Trailblazers, with all the incidents that happened there, I'm not going to use the obnoxious term that was thrown at them. Yeah. But there were a lot of incidents once upon a time. And in the case of somebody like Zach Randolph, who, reference point, because Zach, of course, rebranded. This is a terrible
word. Rehabilitated.
I don't want to use rehabilitated either. Zach Randolph became a new person and a beloved figure in Memphis after a very rocky start in his early years with Portland when he was very young and had a lot of buddies with him that he brought from home who got him in a lot of trouble. And everybody even then would tell you Zach Randolph is a teddy bear of a guy. He's a wonderful person, a warm-hearted guy, and is not trying to do anything wrong, but he's got the wrong people around him. And that was the story on him early on in Portland. And then he came to New York, where I covered him briefly with the Knicks. And he's a fantastic, fantastic dude. And then he bounced around, got to Memphis, and became a cult hero and a wonderful person in the community and everything else. So again, do not rush to judgment, I would say to people as well, mm-hmm. about what this might mean about a particular player. Sometimes they just have the wrong people around them. And that was certainly the case for Zach Randolph. But this is reminiscent of a lot of the things that were going on in that time, whether it was with Zach or other members of the Trailblazers or other people around the NBA at that time. It's been a while since we've had a pattern emerge like this involving any particular player, especially somebody of John Morant's caliber.
I was just going to say two quick things. One is about Henry and Howard, actually, as it relates to this. Anyone that listens to the show, Jerron and Henry know all too well. It's hard to impress me on the basketball court. I've been doing this 36 years. I had JV dunk contests for my high school players. Like I had 6'5 freshmen dunking the hell. I had three guys that could do 360s and they were 15 years old, right? I've seen it all.
I love that there's a story that starts with JV dunk contests and ends with Howard and me.
Yeah,
you'll see. Good luck, David.
It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. So it's very hard to catch my attention as something really special. The benefit of having people like Howard and Henry in my life, and certainly as someone who does consume sports beyond just what I do as an analyst, it's not like you can't distract them. Howard gave a little 2-minute little, not even a speech, but like it's so obvious, guys. You're not gonna just release some kind of statement and say Howard have the Howard Bexler world saying, "Oh, okay, I get it now. No harm, no foul." Like this guy has been around. If everyone thought like him, the whole world would be a much better place because we're gonna ferret out the bullshit fast. Guys like him, and so people like me who aren't as knowledgeable need to follow people like that. We should be listening to them as it comes to something like this because it is important. The reason why it's important is if John Morant wasn't as good, he'd already be cut. He'd be gone. He would have been cut from this team. Maybe someone else would pick him up. But you can't have three incidents of this as a borderline player. Done. You are out of that job. And at some point, no one is above 4, 5, 6 incidents. I mean, at some point, there's a line. Now, what I would want to know if anyone in Memphis is asking these questions to the owner, have you talked to Ja about this? The GM, have you talked to Ja? Because the coach can't fire him. The GM can because he can trade him, and the owner can because he can say to the GM, we got to get rid of this guy. But someone has to be having this conversation with him. And I have zero confidence that anyone is going to hold him accountable to what's going on. In fact, I worry just the opposite. I worry they're going to double down on the image because Memphis is promoting that as a team, like we're the tough guys or whatever. And what Jerron said is true, too. As I've talked to players before, I know you're 6'9", 6'10". He's not, but I have players that are. And I know you think you beat up everyone. Guns don't give a fuck. Like, you have got to play it. I have this speech with my kids, my son. Like, you, I know you're a big, strong dude. Guns don't give a fuck about how strong and lean you are. You've got to know when to just pick up and move on. That macho shit don't work. Listen to Richard Pryor talk about that in a very funny concert one time. So it's, Gerard started this with, I'm concerned, and you have every right to be, Gerard. As a Grizzlies fan, but as an NBA fan and a fan of human beings, like, something's going on here and needs to be addressed and changed.
And the last thing I want to say on this is, I want to be clear, and I want to, because Henry, you're right. The world isn't fair, right? And David, we talk about this. Players, these guys are being hustled since they were like 7 years old.
As soon as they show
old.
They could like, play.
Right? Everyone's got their hands in their pockets, trying to steal from them, trying to do whatever. And there is a sense that when you become this multimillionaire, which John Morant is now.
Many times over.
Who are your peers? Who do you hang out with, right? Because the people in your income bracket don't look like you, by and large, right? Like, so you want to be with people that you know. The problem is, not all of them, right, are at the level that you are now, have the responsibilities you have now. And you have to find a way to discern that. And that's what Henry talked about with LeBron, right? It's like, all right, guys, like, and it's probably really hard work and annoying and, like, way more than he wanted to do. But that's why you go 450 years in the NBA without any issues, right? Because you have to put in the work. You have way too much to lose here, my guy. Way, way too much.
And I think if you're, I was a Blazers fan during the Zach Randolph thing, which is exactly the player that came to mind, right? I'm like, Zach Randolph, you know, like, just had a, it's hard to know what really happened, but there were just a lot of things, right? And some of the reports were worse, were very bad, but you don't really know what happened. And it's tempting as a fan of someone who's like a fan of Zach Randolph. It's tempting to think that the people who are claiming this stuff are out to get you or haters, right? But it's not really like Zach ended up becoming a much happier person because it was, some of this was real and it really had to be acknowledged as real. And then it really had to change. Right. And like, the point is you can love Zach Randolph and not poo-poo these accusers at all. Right. Like, these are bad situations, right? And you want the situation to become a good situation, right? And so, like, that comes from not sweeping it under the rug. I think it's like, I don't know what happened here, but it's tempting as a Grizzlies fan or a Jaw fan just to be like, nah, I didn't think you're going to fight the reality. But, like, no, we got to accept the reality. Just be open-minded, follow the evidence, and, like, and it could be much better for Jaw that way, even if short-term it hurts a little.
Well said, well said. Guys, we yesterday published a story from one of our Monday morning editorial meetings about Nikola Jokic. And we joined the fray of the MVP discussion that is pretty lowbrow and, you know, it's silly. And it prompts Henry to have these conversations with me and with the larger team about media. And, well, Henry, I would like you to describe how you describe the people who run the media business.
Like, with that, and then, like, you know, Howard coming on the show, I don't usually use the word imbeciles very much, but, like, I've been using it, like, right and left.
I'm glad I inspired you to use the word imbeciles, the very side of me. No.
You were the indirect cause.
Yeah, no, I...
Not sure, I mean, how to take that.
Regular listeners will not be surprised to hear me say that I'm unimpressed by, like, the leaders of sports media, right? And here's, I think, the most useful way for me to say it. So there's a really good podcast I listened to recently about this guy who started something called The Blacklist in Hollywood. He had a job of reading scripts and he would work his ass off, go home, everyone can read like every script. He's working for some celebrity who's trying to find like just the perfect one to invest in. And after a while he realizes like there are 70, 80, 100 people like him in Hollywood who have to just like try to find the script that no one knows about, right? And long story short, he got all of them to secretly submit the ones they liked to him in exchange. He submitted the amalgamated list to all of them, which was an interesting, it was probably bad for their employer, but it was good for them because now they had better eyes. They could see of all the, I think he had some crazy number, like the Writers Guild of America has something like 500,000 scripts are registered a year. Wow. So he's like, this is a library with no book jackets, right? No labels, no, it's just all this stuff. We're supposed to find the good thing in there, find like the one good thing. So a whole weekend of working and he'd come back with like, nope, nothing good. And once they started this different method of searching, the Blacklist, it was called, the Blacklist became the source of like one Oscar winner after another, record-setting movies. Now it's a whole production company. It's like a, it's an incredible innovation in finding quality stuff. The first list included Diablo Cody, who no one had ever heard of, wrote this script called Juno, which became like this big hit, right? So I would argue that like, if you're a talented reader and you read a ton of stuff, then you'll find Juno, which has no characteristics of a hit. It has no George Clooney. It has no like, you know, has none of the like things in this. It has no like Joe Esterhaz or like big screenwriter name. It's just a good fucking well-executed story. I happen to love the movie Juno. But
it was great.
Love it. So what they did was they took like the circumstances of success and then they put it together. In our business now at this phase, and Howard, please jump in here. Like, I feel like I'm not aware of anybody with that kind of vision where it's like, these are the ingredients of success. Instead, what I see is like a strategy, which is sort of like, oh, well, you know, Stephen A is pretty famous. He'll get some audience. So we'll execute that play, which is, this is the opposite way of finding a movie. This is say where you say like, I have no idea if the script is good or not, but we got George Clooney. Mm-hmm. Like, just go, right? Like, there's some business there. That's not nothing. But much more interesting to me is like, ooh, like we have the talented Howard Beck and we're going to put him in this situation where it's just going to be like 10x success, right? This is just like a basketball player where you're like, how do you optimally use Kevin Durant? Not just get Kevin Durant, just throw him out there. Like, but what do you do to make that really the most it can be? And like, when I use the word imbeciles, I'm saying like, I don't see a lot of like putting people in position to succeed in sports media now. In fact, I see almost none. I can't see evidence of it really at all. And it's kind of a bummer because I feel like this industry could be a lot more successful, interesting, with fewer layoffs. And that would be good.
This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey guys, Gerard from True Hoop here. If you had an extra hour in your day, what would you do? It's a hell of a question. Would you maybe go for a run, take a nap, read a book? Maybe show up for a friend. Now, depending on the day, any one of those would be a great idea. Most of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Now, I've been open in the past with you guys about this. I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I. And both are extremely helpful in developing positive coping skills and learning how to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/truehoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TrueHoop.
Amen to that.
Oh, we should point out here that in our preparing for today's show, we basically agreed that like Howard's a nicer guy in a more delicate situation than I am. So I'm going to be harsh and name call-y and Howard isn't, which is appropriate.
Totally fine.
I mean, Henry knows me well enough to know, all of you probably know me well enough to know that I have many, many thoughts on the state of the media industry and the sports media industry that we all talk about in press rooms and bars and other places, but not on this podcast for me.
Not today.
I will just say that on a couple quick thoughts, since this was sparked by the MVP discussion and presumably Perks thing. Yesterday, I don't know what even to call it. I'll just say his Perks thing.
That's the thing.
The MVP discussion annually goes further and further off the rails, and it's become annoying, frankly, especially for those of us who, you know, I've had a ballot for more years than not in the 26 years I've covered the league, and those of us who are on part of that voting panel put a lot of thought, a lot of analysis, a lot of research into this. I mean, I can't speak for all 100 people, but I know that a lot of us put an excruciating amount of thought and analysis into this. So to have it reduced to any number of talking points and speculated on or the assumptions made. Oh, well, the voters do this because of X, Y, Z, or they snubbed this guy because of it. Come on. Like, there's 100 of us, for one thing. We're not, there's no conference call. We're not, there's no consensus being hatched here after some 100 person way discussion over a massive Zoom call.
Could it's you imagine? 100
people.
Oh my God.
No, I cannot.
It would be awful. It would be awful.
They're all wonderful people, but I don't want to see those 99 other faces all at once while we're trying to talk over each other and make really, you know, cogent points about the MVP race. And by the way, it used to be 125, 126. It was cut down to 100, maybe, I don't know, 8-10 years ago. It used to be over like 125 people. It's now 100. It's a lot of people. We're all individuals. We're in various parts of the country and the world because there are international reporters in there as well. We are of every gender, race, ethnicity, nationality, maybe not all nationalities. There are a lot of nationalities around the world, but a lot of nationalities because we have international reporters covering the league. It is, you know, I don't want to say it's a diverse group because people have different definitions of how much diversity you need to qualify as diverse, but it is a spread of people. And the NBA, in deciding how to create that panel and who do the ballots go to, spends a lot of time, again, I know this for a fact, spends a lot of time trying to make sure that we have some sense of diversity when it comes to gender and race and location around the country and again around the world. All of which is to say that anytime you reduce the results of an MVP vote, whether it's this year, last year, the Steve Nash year, any of these other years that might have been a little more disputed, the Russell Westbrook year, whatever, you can't draw any broad conclusions about what the voters did because the voters are not one person in one mind on a 100-person conference call. It is literally 100 people sitting at their desks at home where I am sitting right now looking at 50 different tabs open every April with all these basketball reference searches, stat head searches, NBA stats site, looking at it every which way, trying to consider all things and trying to come to some sort of logical conclusion based on my own definition of what I think the MVP is. And everybody has their own. And after all of that process is done, you have something approximating a consensus. And whether it's right or wrong, whatever right and wrong even means, I don't know. It's not one thought process, though. And so to draw any conclusions about the outcome and say that it's because of any particular factor, or to say that it's because it was against one person, they don't want to give it to this guy. I mean, come on. And so Perk is, by the way, not the only source of nonsense on this recently.
Not the only.
He's the tallest one, though.
Is a great phrase.
He's the tallest one.
By far the tallest one and the one I least want to accuse of nonsense in person. but other people, like the conspiracy theories or the paranoia, the accusations of agendas and Boston media mafia stuff and all this stuff, those things are really irritating because it negates all of us as individuals and the fact that we are all trying to do this to the best of our ability individually. And this is just, you know, the outcome goes where it goes. But anyway, all right, I'm done pontificating and ranting, probably far more than Henry expected.
But Henry, this is the thing you're saying about sports media, though, right? Because that Perk clip, I'm sure, went viral yesterday. I don't know. I didn't see the numbers, but I bet it did.
I didn't see it, but a ton of engagement on social media. I read it, but I didn't see it.
All right. So, well, there you go. Right. And you don't even go on there, David. So that's how I know it. Yeah. If you saw it, then that's how I know. Like, this is the goal, right, of sports media now. It's to do this thing. Not necessarily 100 individual people. We all think, no. Perk said, well, he didn't say. He implied it's because he's white. Right? That's going to get everybody charged up. And it's like, why are we doing this lowest common denominator thing? Like, why?
Well, I have one thought that I love irony. It's one of my favorite words. And this is a really ironic situation because that which best gives us, I'm an analyst. I'm analyzing data all the time. And very often, not very often, there's times where I'm wrong, where I think one thing and then the data shows that I'm not right. And other times I'm trying to solve an answer and data, solve a question. Data can show me, at least as we're talking about me and Henry, for my article next week. I'm trying to figure out something about the New York Knicks. What the fuck's going on? I go to data to at least give me some idea. And I know what I'm looking on the court, and I still need data. The data is faceless. It's nameless. We can just call it A, B, C, D, E, or name them planets. The data shows us what it shows us. And so to suggest that the data is what is the racist part of this is where the irony really is, because it's just the opposite. It should tell us an answer. I look at a lot of charts. I did this last year when I picked Jokic as the MVP. He was number one in all of them. Now, if I look at the top five best metrics that I believe in that tell us the overall best, most impactful player, and Jokic won three of them and Embiid won two, now we can really get into, I think, something challenging. It just hasn't happened. Jokic is number one on all of them, almost across the board, in some cases by huge margins. And so, to me, then it becomes interesting, and I'm all for it. I just said today to Henry on the phone, I hope Joel really surges these last 20-some-odd games, and Philly wins 18 of them. And Jokic does what he's doing. I'm not rooting for Jokic to play badly, but if Embiid really surges, and at least they're close, it's a fun argument. But right now, there's no argument. We're making something out of nothing.
I'm big on, like, if you're going to accuse someone of something, like, be specific, right? This is how the law works, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, Perk must know fucking 35 voters.
At least.
Right? Who? Like, have you talked to that person about it, Kendrick? Like, is that person racist? Like, who's racist? Like, the word the media is, like, way too easy, right? It's just like if, yeah. if you can come up, if it's predominantly racist, I don't think Howard's racist, and I think he's being honest about how he's voting. I don't know the inner workings of everybody's emotional state when they vote, whatever. Like,
no,
just allow America's Wi-Fi. Racist, right? It could
Henry's
be, right?
Wi-Fi. We knew it.
It could. Oh,
right God. When he said something really
is my Wi-Fi racist?
Something really profound. This is typically what happens.
Am I still frozen?
Yeah. We just hear murmurs.
Nope, you're back.
You sound like Charlie Brown's teacher.
That's really sad. Was it better than what I actually said, though? Probably it was better. Like the Charlie Brown teacher version.
You were on a roll, Henry. No, really good. You were really like hammering the point home.
Okay. What should we do now?
Well, I want to ask Howard something. Howard, you were voting when Nash won the MVPs.
No. In fact, I did not. So real
He's
quick.
Like, thank God. I don't get to answer that question.
Oh, no,
I wasn't
going
to ask that question.
Gerard,
I had a different question.
Gerard, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I love being able to play this card because that the Nash one or the two Nash ones, or especially the second Nash one, is one of the more disputed ones. And I have a get out of jail free card on this because for the 9 years that I worked for the New York Times from 2004 through 2013, I was not allowed to vote by Times policy. And so I voted most of my years working for the LA Daily News, 97 to 04. I've voted every year since leaving the Times in 2013. I did not vote from the 04-05 season through the 12-13 season, which means you can't blame me if you don't think
that's not what I was going to ask you, though. Although that is very interesting. What I ask you is the because I was at ESPN, I think started maybe 06 or 07. I didn't have a vote. I don't remember the kind of anywhere close to the kind of data then available to us that we have now. Obviously, Second Spectrum didn't even exist, but there and all the other things that the NBA didn't have, all the things they have, right? So you were doing it much more on regular statistics and slightly advanced ones like PER. Just,
wait, Howard wasn't doing it.
I meant even before. It was not. I didn't mean just with Nash. I meant even before Nash. Like, historically, it's been very basic numbers that we know now don't tell a great story compared to what we have now.
We have far more data than we've ever had before. I would actually argue we now have too much data because now I see people pinning entire arguments to a single stat or a single advanced stat or on-off ratings. And all of these things have their flaws and none of them are definitive on their own. And I don't like having the MVP argument reduced to, well, if you're leading in all these advanced stats, ergo, therefore, you must be. And if that's the case, we don't need ballots and we don't need
voters. That's my argument.
Just combine all the stats and award it to whoever won the stats thing.
That's what I say.
And listen, some people would say, yes, by all means, let's do that and take you idiots out of it. Or excuse me, the imbeciles. We're imbeciles.
Okay, you can use it like that. Okay.
But But I don't think that's really what we want. I don't think we really want an algorithm to spit out the MVP every year. I think we kind of want the debate, and we want the discussion, and we want the context and the dreaded narrative. All of these things matter. The win totals matter. Everything matters. It all matters.
That's true. And that's win total matters.
That's what used to be the fun of this debate, as opposed to what is now the pain of this debate, because people have distorted it and weaponized it and used it for their own grievances and conspiracy theories. That part has gotten annoying to the fucking nth degree. But I do think that it's on balance. I'm glad we have more data. I try to look at as much of it as possible, but the data is not definitive. Speaking of data, I should just note this one thing, because I saw this on Twitter late last night. Perk in his thing,
Perk's thing, I like it.
Said since 1990, only three guys won MVP who weren't in the top 10 in scoring. And he says Nash, Jokic, Nowitzki. And he says, what do those guys have in common? The obvious implication there. Our friend Ben Taylor, who does a great job tweeting, podcasting, writing, analyzing the game. He's very smart and great dude. Ben Taylor tweeted last night, and I think he's the first person I saw actually do this. He says, not sure if this has been corrected, but it's just flat out wrong. Jokic was 6th and 10th in points per game in the 2 years that he won MVP. He was top 5 in total points both years. So even on a total basis instead of just per game basis, Dirk was 11th in points per game by a half point the year that he won it, but 5th in total points. So Perk's premise wasn't even well-founded or statistically accurate. Much less the implication that came behind
I think he was just pointing out they weren't American.
Raise your hand if you agree with me.
and do you know why he used 1990? Because if you go back to the 80s and you look at Magic Johnson's MVPs, who, by the way, everyone on this podcast agrees is one of the greatest basketball players of all time. End of discussion. Magic, not a top 10 point per game scorer either.
Not even close.
But that doesn't fit the narrative that I want to spin. So,
well, I feel like there's I want no part of this, like, there is no racism. Like, every time people say that, I'm like, there's always fucking racism. Like, but this one's just not that simple, right? Like, it's just,
no, like, it's and just, reducing it's just it not. To that, reducing to that not only is inaccurate, but it's insulting. It was unnecessary. You can make a case. Chris Dempsey, our friend from I don't know what the regional sports network in Denver is. I apologize. Altitude. I knew Chris way back in his Denver Post days, so I still think of it as Chris Dempsey of the Denver Post because I'm old. Chris Dempsey had a great 5-minute, very measured and analytical rebuttal that he posted to his Instagram yesterday, just noting that, look, and he ended it with this kind of note. I'm just going to paraphrase him, but basically, like, Perk, if you want to argue for Embiid or Giannis or whatever, like, great, make the argument for those guys, but make that argument. Don't make the argument that Jokic is only winning MVPs because of the color of his skin or his whatever or anything else Just make the case for why the other guys are a better MVP candidate or a more worthy MVP winner. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to go there with this. And Henry said it, like, race is in everything, right? None of us should ever pretend that it's not present in just about every discussion as text or subtext. It is there consciously, subconsciously. I absolutely believe that. It has, and I'm not even going to say that it has zero place ever in these awards discussions or the way we discuss players in the NBA. What I will say is that it had absolutely zero relevance to the point that Perk was trying to make yesterday. And that's the part that is insulting to me.
I'll tell you another thing. It's like Allen Iverson won MVP and I was covering that team. And like it, that's one of the, that one doesn't hold up well at all. Right. Like if you apply any defensive screen, like that Allen Iverson and the kind of player that he was, like tiny high volume shooters, like
low efficiency.
They're never the MVP. And you can find no analytic to suggest that this is, and you know, he was like, he was a very exciting player, but it wasn't like a very meritorious vote, right? Like I was thrilled that he won. He had the whole country like electric. He's an incredible player, but that was because we wanted him. We liked him, right? I mean, on vote, but to me, like if we're looking at people who didn't deserve to win, and then the other one, to me, like, one of the most egregious was Derrick Rose over LeBron James. Like,
yeah.
Like, people just didn't fucking want LeBron to win that year. Like, he was just annoying. Like, he annoyed the world. And he did. And Derrick Rose wasn't better. He just wasn't. And that to me, like, it's not a perfect system. You know, neither is our democracy, whatever, right? But like, but like, you know, the fact is, like, there have been some good votes and some less good votes, and it doesn't cut strictly on racial lines.
Well said, guys. All right.
Wait, can I make one other little thing? Yeah. Actually, yeah. So one other little thing as far as like the media goes, and CJ McCollum at All-Star Weekend,
new media,
said this thing that was like, and I think CJ's a great guy, and he's president of the Players Association, but he was basically like, you know, we need to look at this voting because like the media are actually affecting people's income, right? Because some people, you know, if you're voted this or that, it can affect your contract you can get. I'm like, it's actually affecting people's income, CJ. Like, read the fucking room. You know what just happened to Howard? You know what I mean? Like, come on, buddy. Everybody we're talking about is never gonna starve at all. Like, there's no concern about the mortgage, right? Like, like, actually affecting people's income, like that weekend. Well, fuck you.
all right, listen. Thank you, and point taken. And I talked to CJ a couple different times over the course of that weekend because I was also at the party that his agency put on, and we chit chatted that night. And I had just gotten the news about my layoff from yeah. my soon to be former employer. So he knew he's not being insensitive.
He's not.
But no, listen. The point.
I was just fighting for you, Howard. In my
thank
head.
You.
I was having an imaginary conversation with CJ.
Thank you. I didn't even think of it in those terms at the moment, and I was sitting in the room as he said that because it was that the union's press conference. I was there. Listen, I will just say this as also the newly elected president of the Pro Basketball Writers Association. And as somebody who I've been fairly outspoken on this, just as a PBWA member and officer in the past, we should not be determining players' incomes, no matter how much they already make and whether they're worthy of $30 million or so more. We should not have a role in that. We were conscripted into that role. Now, we could, any one of us can refuse to vote in a given year. Sure. Okay. That's fine. The whole media could just decide we're not voting on awards, and the NBA will have to figure out another voting body. Good luck with that. but what we did not sign up for, what we did not agree to, was to tie bonuses or Supermax contracts to the tune of whatever, 25, 30 million more per contract, to tie that to awards. We didn't do that. The Players Association's leadership and the NBA's negotiators did that. They did that in the collective bargaining agreement some years ago. I have both publicly and privately complained and urged them to undo that. We don't want to be determining, like, I understand, like, people say, oh, well, there are always bonuses for this and that. Yeah, okay, fine. There were probably some bonuses, not on the order of 30 million. And a lot of those were tied to things like All-Star games, which are fan vote, as well as now media vote and player vote and everything else. This is the most direct cause effect in terms of media action, the vote, and player earnings, the Supermax eligibility. We should not be part of this. The league and the union need to find a better way. I have made this same plea directly to CJ McCollum and to Tamika Tremaglio, the new executive director, not so new anymore. She's been in the seat for a year or so. But I have urged them, and I've said I'm open to, as you know, a representative of the PBWA, to discussing this. I don't know where that will lead because the CBA seems to be pretty far down the road. I don't know if this is something they've resolved. I imagine this is way down the list of action items or priorities for both sides. Nevertheless, from my perspective and speaking on my own behalf and to an extent on behalf of my fellow media members, we don't want to be determining what a player can earn. And it was not our choice. And I will continue to urge them to undo that piece of it.
Oh, well said. And since we're here, well, let's talk about that pending CBA deal between the NBA and NBPA.
Look at me set up that segue.
Lovely segue, Howard. Look, I don't want to be hyperbolic about it, but I feel like, because David and Henry and I have been talking about the future of the NBA, right? And the future of sports in general. This deal to me seems like it is maybe the most critical one. Like, just because I don't know how the delivery of this product is going to happen going forward, right? Yes, they're going to sign a broadcast deal and whenever they're going to announce it and do the thing, but the ratings are continuing to decline. Henry always talks about, at some point, that package, the way we sell it, is not going to be worth $8 billion. It's going to start be worth less, which means BRI is going to go down, which means a whole lot of other things. Like, this deal to me is so, so important about the future of the league. What say you all?
Did you guys see what baseball just did with the pitch count?
Love it.
Yeah, I think there, I think
if it's a did you see what baseball did, for me the answer is always a no. same. Fucking clue what baseball did.
They've got a pitch clock now. And I think spring training games are down 20, maybe 29 minutes, some big number. This is the dilemma Henry's been talking about for a long time. Like the NBA, whatever they have to do, they better be thinking about how to get more fans, how to get younger fans to start wanting to watch the game. And so I agree with your general assessment, Gerard. This is super, super important because it might be the last big deal we have.
Howard and I spent a lot of time together in the hallway outside.
I remember. 2010, 11. I was on the phone with you a lot during those
sidewalks. Yeah. Always.
I remember.
Like, how many freaking hours did we spend doing nothing?
I mean, we weren't doing nothing. We were we were tweeting.
We were looking for chargers.
We were looking for places to charge our phones and computers. I think I had a BlackBerry at the time.
We all did. We all did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the 2011 lockout Henry's referring to, in which a number of us were staked out outside any number of Manhattan hotels, almost all of them on the Upper East Side. Some of which had lobbies which were chilled to like 25 degrees and they were very uncomfortable to sit in. I'm looking at you, the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah.
Do not touch the piano at the Waldorf Astoria in the lobby. Don't think they liked a bunch of scruffy sports writers hanging out there for all hours.
No, everybody likes that.
Scruffy. Yeah.
There was
the day Greg Popovich wandered by. Like randomly on a jog?
I missed that day because that was literally the day I was assigned to go cover the Red Sox spiraling. My Times editors were like, you're not doing anything. I'm like, no, I got a lockout to cover. Like, no, we need somebody to go. The Red Sox are like about to have a historic collapse. Go cover baseball for 2 days. So I missed Popovich as a result. I'll never forgive my editors for that.
He didn't miss much. It was just same haranguing shit that you get after every game and every hallway. What the fuck are you guys doing here? Jesus. Like, trying to relax a little, like that kind of thing.
It really never did change, did it? It was it was Groundhog Day. I was perversely not entertained, but like there's something about that whole lockout saga and covering it that actually I perversely enjoyed. I don't know why. It was just different. It was weird. It was unpredictable. The cat and mouse game of us trying to figure out where they were negotiating, finding somebody to leak the information. I won't tell the story because it's not my story to tell, but my buddy Ken Berger had a really clever way of ferreting it out one day.
I want to know about that.
I can't say it's Ken's story to tell. And also it was like a bunch of us, like, because we're just punch drunk at all hours sitting around, we're just like, yeah, we were on the clock, we're working, but we're, you know, it was also kind of just like I said, weirdly fun. Like we're sitting there eating like takeout pizza in the lobby of the, you know, Waldorf Astoria. Like it was weird. It was all surreal and strange and a unique, reporting experience that, we probably won't replicate and probably shouldn't.
I didn't. That was not my emotional experience of it. It definitely had some like fun components.
I was like, stories to tell. You got all these stories to tell, and it's just you know, you're just. But Howard, like, how important is the deal though? Like, I mean, yes, I know it's important for basketball to actually be played, but in terms of the importance for the league going forward, the future of the league.
So it's interesting because for the last several years, maybe since the 2011 lockout, and as we moved into the cord cutting era, I had some of the same concerns and suspicions about, like, well, okay, $24 billion over 9 years is what they got in their TV deal that they signed, whenever it was, 2012, 13, whenever it was, 2014. And I thought, wow, now we're moving to the cord cutting era, and are Turner and Disney going to get the return on investment for these massive outlays they just made that they committed to over the next 9 years, and during a period when more and more people are cutting the cord? And I did wonder the same thing. Well, if revenue comes down, if the next TV deal comes down, then the salary cap comes down, and now you've got these massive salaries that don't fit a new salary. I thought that's where this was all going, and I thought the whole thing could crater and it could be really disastrous. But every credible estimate out there, and I am no expert on TV rights deals, but stuff I read from people who are much smarter about this than I am, say they're going to double to triple the last rights deal. And that, as much as people are cord cutting, you know, there are all these new revenue streams, literally streaming, right? You know, over the top, all these other new methods of beaming the games into people's homes, and many more players in terms of broadcast outlets, because they're not just all just broadcasts. Some of them are just streamers. So there's all these, you know, instead of it being a two-way national deal between Turner and Disney, ESPN, it may well be three or four. And NBC apparently is trying to get back in the fray, and Amazon could get into the fray, and who knows, Paramount Plus might get in there. And so I'm not concerned about whether the league is going to be able to still generate just an amazing, uncalculable amounts of revenue. They're going to. It's going to continue to grow. Whether people continue to watch traditionally, which is, Coach, your point, that's the real question, right? If everybody is just watching highlights now and reacting to 30-second clips or compilations, and they're not watching full games, that does have implications. And yet, the people who are about to write these massive checks in the billions and billions of dollars to the NBA, they know all that stuff, and they know that stuff better than we do. And they're doing it anyway.
I think they'll get the money, right? But it is not justified. Like this they've already, will they stop watching? We're 15 years into that. Like, it's fucking done. Like, it's done as a TV show. Like, the only thing is, like, you know, it was worth enough to some people at Disney and Turner to pay this much to, like, keep Disney and Turner relevant in these ways. But, like, the night by night, like, income, like the ad, they sell the ads and they sell the ESPN subscriptions, like, does not cover the cost. Not even close, right? It's completely fucked. Like I'm telling you, I think I've signed some things I'm supposed to say, some of it. Like, so I won't tell you what I know, but fucking trust me. Like, and a big theme is the league going to the partner saying, like, can you please make us relevant? Like, can you please make this matter to young people? And, like, and, you know, I've heard from the league itself that, like, a huge indicator of future audience is how people play basketball. Like, you know, like these numbers, and people just watching cable TV ads fucking cooked. Right. Like, nothing like LeBron's salary can be supported by any of this. Right. So will in the future someone figure out another product that will actually make that kind of money? Like, probably not. I would, my guess. But, like, will someone be willing to lose that amount of money to win some streaming wars? Like, maybe. Yes. Right. I think so. Like,
for a period of time, anyway.
For a period of time. So this is where we are. It's like, this whole last deal was an abomination. I mean, they're talking about carving off ESPN from Disney because it's such a big money loser, and then letting it die so that Disney's okay, right? ESPN is the cancer on Disney right now, right? Like because of these deals. This is their big outlay, right? If you're the head of Amazon, you probably have so much money you're willing to take on that kind of risk, right? But there aren't that many Amazons, right? And they won't last forever. And so to me, like, yeah, the NBA has the luxury of this period of reformation and, like, figuring out, like, the new big thing. But, like, you know, the things that drive big audiences for the NBA now don't drive big revenue for the NBA now, right? Those YouTube pre-roll ads are bullshit as paying LeBron's salary, right? So, you're right. They're going to definitely get a long runway to figure it out, but it's not infinite. And if they get it wrong, like, I don't know how this goes.
The house is on fire. Right? Like, the house is on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can't just assume it's like Draymond said. I told you what Draymond said about the Warriors' defense, applicable to everything. It's not just coming. You got to go get it. We got to solve something.
Yeah, you got to go.
Yeah, we're going to get extinguished.
And the thing is, the league has it, right? Because of all the four major North American sports, in terms of its social media engagement, it's number one by far. Right. And it is the number, its young fan base is larger than any of the other sports. Figure out, talk to these people, right? Like, talk to them and figure out what they want to do and start tailoring things that help. Yeah, we won't like it, but I was going to say we're going to die soon anyway. But like, we're not going to be here forever. We're not going to be here forever. So whatever. Like, figure it out.
But they've basically said, I mean, they've been smart with the social media where they're basically just like, we're going to just give you the league.
Yes. Yeah.
On every new platform, we're just going to give it to you.
Just give it to you.
And then we'll assume at some point when we come with our handout and say, pay for the league, that you will. And so far, like that second part,
it just isn't.
Nope. Like, League Pass is not a juggernaut, you know? Like what is the thing where, because if you can either have, like, you know, a billion people watch, then you can put ads on it and it's free. Or if you have, you know, I don't know, some number of, you know, tens of millions watching, then they have to pay you. Otherwise, the business isn't very big, right? And, like, they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be something interesting to watch as we have going forward. Howard, any parting thoughts? Thank you so much for joining us today.
No parting thoughts other than, it's almost time for us to move the car back again. So I'm glad we're wrapping up. My wife took the first shift moving the car to double park, and it's now my turn, to go out and put it back. What's the ticket if
you're late with that?
I haven't gotten one in a long time. I do know this much. The economics of this are funny. You're actually better off just getting the ticket once a week than paying to garage your car in New York because a garage costs like $400 to $500 a month. And you're going to get ticketed probably at most once a week. And I think those are like, I don't know, 60, 70 bucks or whatever. It's still cheaper to get tickets than it is to officially legally park your car. Or you just do this silly dance that we do in my neighborhood every Tuesday
just,
and Thursday.
The whole point of it is just to make David feel good about Florida.
Too late.
It's going to take more. I was going to say it's going to take a little bit more than that. But no, this has been a pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me. It's been a blast. Would love to do it again. I've got plenty of time on my hands.
Not for long.
Thank you, Howard. Thank you, David. Thank you, Henry. All right, guys. We will see you later on. Take care.